Good evening and welcome to the first in a new series of penalty spot shows in association with the Barbados Football Association. It's time to talk football once again. Well, coming up on today's program, we get the latest developments in the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association's ongoing saga. We have two special features for you. That's Club Corner. And today we look at Weymouth Wales. And in our player profile, Anthony Daisy Clark takes the spotlight. The international scene is dominated with the possibility of the European leagues restarting. And we also have the latest transfer news. And we hear from a sports psychologist on the impact on players of playing football games without fans in the stadium. This is the Penalty Spot. Back with you in association with the Barbados Football Association. Good evening to everyone, and it's our pleasure to be back once again and to present our football show where we can talk about the greatest sport anywhere in the world. As I say, good evening to Curtis Hines.
A very good evening to you, Paul. A very good evening to all of our listeners as well. And welcome back to the program. We had a break, of course, due to the ongoing pandemic. But yes, Penalty Spot is back. We can also take your calls tonight, 4341-790. You can get your emails in 18sports246@gmail.com. Lots going on in football, believe it or not. We have a mini crisis, well, not mini, full-blown crisis in Trinidad and Tobago in terms of the normalization committee. We're going to take a look at that. But before we get too deep into the local information, I believe we can begin with some of what has been happening on the international scene. In terms of today, June, it's being targeted by English Premier League officials to restart the Premiership. We're being told they would like to have the Premier League restarted as soon as possible. Of course, there's some money reasons behind that as well. The TV deals would be voided. And of course, when the players are playing, the economy on a whole would benefit. Also, cessation of the season at this point would ruin Liverpool's chances of getting their first title for 20-odd years. So I'm sure the Liverpool fans have their fingers crossed in terms of having a restart. As we said, they're looking at early July. I believe Arsenal began training once again today. Spurs are set to reopen their training ground if they head off to the online story. And it says that Tottenham will make a number of pitches available to their players at the training center from tomorrow. One player will be permitted to use the team will be permitted to use the pitch at any one time to exercise. And Spurs will restrict the number of players who are allowed to train at the facility each day. All members of staff and the playing squad will be required to maintain social distancing measures while at the facility. And of course, Paul, you would have known, Tottenham caught twice training in public areas and were forced to apologize. So Spurs now opening the facility and hoping to have some training on site. Personally, I think it's still too soon, but I can understand the rush to get the Premier League back up and running.
Yeah, they're very anxious right across Europe, and some of them, one or two of the clubs running afoul of the restriction measures, but you can understand the being anxious, but I think they just need to be a little patient. At some point, they'll get back onto the field, whether it's with spectators or not. But they have so much happening in terms of that, and then they want some of them not wanting to pay a cut and so on.
Yes, in terms of the dates, now to bring it closer to home, in terms of the English Premiership, Arsenal, the first club to get training back up and running, that happened today. June 13th is one of the suggested start dates. That's the date that has been penciled in for the resumption of the Premier League. More than likely, at this stage, behind closed doors, July 27th is set to be the finish of the English Premiership, where the champions will be crowned. And if they are champions this season, clearly, it's going to be Liverpool. The culmination of the European leagues would be in the weekend of late July. And the target at this stage is to have the Champions League concluded on April 29th. That would still put us very, very late in terms of the traditional preseason games and the off-season and whatnot. I can't see the 2021-2022 season starting on time, but as it stands right now, August 29th is looked at as the final date for European football in terms of the Champions League. Of course, since we would have last had the show, Euro 2020 has been cancelled. That's been postponed until 2021. like the Olympic Games. In terms of some of the other stories, the Premier League clubs are to face an astonishing £4 million bill for coronavirus testing kits, but the medical staff apparently have ethical concerns about using up to 26,000 tests just so the players can be checked twice a week as group training resumes. Of course, if the season does resume, the players will have to be tested, but with the tests in a short supply, one issue is the financing, £4 million, which is a lot of money, but in football terms, not a lot. But being able to use up 26,000 testing kits when members of the public can't get them, that has apparently sparked some debate. In terms of some other international football news, Barcelona are apparently set to make a record signings to Felipe Coutinho and Ousmane Dembele, who cost a combined £267 million available for swap deals this summer as they try to get them out of the Camp Nou. They're looking to bring in some new faces. Neymar of PSG has been tipped with a sensational return, but Coutinho and Dembele look to be on their way out. Coutinho was linked heavily with Chelsea for the last few days, but apparently that interest has cooled. And it's ironic, Paul, that they would be available for swap deals, not even cash, because Coutinho cost £142 million in 2018, whereas Dembele was signed for £124.5 million just last year.
Yeah, I think, Curtis, it may be a good time to bring in a gentleman who has been, I don't think he's been breaking any curfew rules. Nick Maitland, analyst. Good evening, Nick.
Blessed evening, guys. How y'all doing?
Very great, man.
Pretty good.
I'm sure you've been hearing the some of the stories that Curtis has been bringing to us this evening. Your reaction?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me just say that I miss you guys very, very much. I miss football as well. All these stories just bringing back the feeling of football, and you know, is we really want football to resume, but we want to be safe more than anything else. And all the discussion about teams returning to training, whether there will be a summer transfer window or not, I think these will not take more precedence in our minds than being healthy and being safe. But that being said, football relies heavily on the fans, and the business of football, the industry of football, is the backbone of so many other industries, whether in the United Kingdom, here in Barbados. I'm even thinking about guys like Agony and Yellow, who I guess they depend on the local league and depend on football being played to make their living, if not most of it. So football has so many industries impacted, and I think at the end of it, it's just important for us to be healthy and to be safe. Speaking on the training and trying to resume the league, once it is no risk to anyone, once these players can come and train and not put themselves at greater risk, once they can be fit for the season whenever it starts, I think that is the main thing that we have to consider. When it comes to the finance of football, no, I think that is the area that has been mainly affected. A lot of people wondering, as I said, about the summer transfer window. Remember as well, there would have been players who signed to clubs in January, and they would have been looking to start their new careers possibly in June, July, and link with their new clubs. So it is a lot to consider. It's a lot to consider. It's a lot to take in. But at the end of the day, we just want to be healthy and we want to be safe whenever football resumes.
Indeed, Nick. And in terms of some more international news, as you speak of safety, Argentina has declared its season over. That happened today. And they say there will be no relegation or promotion for two seasons because of the disruptions caused by the coronavirus outbreak. In terms of some of the other international news, news out of Spain, Sevilla coach Lopetegui has said that the La Liga clubs will need at least 5 weeks to prepare for a return. Of course, the players will not have been training and not up to full fitness. Jurgen Klopp says basically the same, whereas UEFA, the governing body for European football, has released £236.5 million for funding for the clubs to help meet the challenges of the virus, what has become very, very clear is that while football is a lucrative sport, when there's no action on the field, the walls come tumbling down pretty quickly. And a number of the lower league clubs now in danger of going into administration, going bankrupt because of the loss of revenue. A number of players have had to take pay cuts to contribute to the non-playing staff and whatnot as they try to keep the clubs afloat. One of the biggest stories of the past week, Newcastle apparently set for a takeover by another Middle Eastern consortium and would make them by far, if the deal goes through, the richest club in England in terms of backing. Currently, that is Manchester City. The owners worth about £9 billion. Well, the backers of Newcastle have about £240 billion of money behind them. So that would be an interesting move. Apparently, that move, however, is meeting some frustration and some obstacles being placed in the way of that move in terms of human rights backgrounds because of the proposed owners. But already lots of action going on behind the scenes. Syria as well, set to resume training on May 4th. Moise Keane at Everton has become the latest player running himself into trouble, having a party during the lockdown. And the club is looking to fine him and possibly sell him. He's not been a hit at the Everton team this season. Came over from Juventus, where he was surprisingly sold, and not really hitting the ground running in Everton either. And there are suggestions he could have a bit of a discipline problem. But it's not going that well for him. As Nick said, football badly, badly missed. Nothing going on except discussion. And it looks like we could have a July restart. I'm not sure how you feel about that, guys. But I think even if we have to scrap the seasons, I think we need to get everything settled, sorted, and nailed down before we even think of restarting football.
Definitely, Beer. I have a pretty packed program this evening. We're trying to get Kenneth in for a quick word from him also. I'm sure he might have uncorked the champagne already and started celebrating for Liverpool.
He and Ronnie. Yeah, put it back up. Never know.
That would please me. So to get
leave it to you, Kenneth.
We'll move smoothly, very shortly, into the Trinidad situation with President Randy Harris. So, Larry's trying to get Kenneth in. I'm sure, and while he's doing that, Nick can come back in and respond.
Yeah, I mean, about the Trinidad situation?
Before we go to Nick, look at some more of the international stuff. I'm not sure if you were on Kenny's Instagram, Paul. I saw that glaring goal he missed in front of the kids.
Yes.
I saw it.
He's there now, Curtis. Good evening, Kenneth.
An emphatic miss.
It was a Liverpool miss, they called it.
It wasn't a Liverpool miss. That's quite unfair. I think, you know, if I put up all the goals that I scored that day, it wouldn't have made become viral. But I just put up my only miss.
It was only a miss.
Kenneth, realistically, though, I think due to the sums of money involved, particularly in England, with the TV money involved that would have to be set aside and all the ramifications for that, also in terms of the transfers, the players who were set to leave clubs, in terms of promotion and demotion, for all of these reasons, I can see why they are indeed pushing for a restart in England.
Of course, you know, like you said, at the bottom of it, it's all about money. And like you mentioned, especially the English Premier League, the sums of money involved is a lot. And there are contractual issues involved, right? I think I've explained it before what is happening with the French League. The French League is moving over to another broadcaster next season. The current broadcaster, I think it's Canal Plus, saying, well, if you're going to cancel the league without giving us the number of games that we've been, you know, contracted to receive, we can't give you the last, you know, installment of the payments due to the French league and the clubs. And the clubs need that money. That's one thing. for the English league, of course, if you use language like cancellation, forfeiture, and everything, number one, you have to deal with your broadcasters, you have to deal with your sponsors, and of course, you know, the fans will wonder, wait a minute, we paid for season tickets, we paid for this, we paid for that. If you cancel, you know, a lot of fans that, you know, there are some fans that haven't thought this through wholesomely. If you say, we are cancelling the league because we don't want Liverpool to win the Premier League, okay. There are people that are out there that are very litigious that are waiting to say, okay, if you cancel the league, you better give me back my money because I paid you for a product that you did not deliver. So at the bottom line, like you said, it's mostly about money.
We saw the, I believe it was the Dutch league, moving to cancel their season, and they seem now to be tempted to backtrack on that.
Of course, yeah. Again, we have to even the Belgium league that cancelled their league and declared Club Brugge the champions. They were meant to vote on that, you know, and that vote has been postponed because people are having second thoughts. Remember, UEFA also, you know, is a very respected body in Europe, and you know, people are also watching. How is UEFA responding to it? To this, UEFA has not, you know, ratified for anyone. UEFA is all for league seasons being finished because that will also impact Champions League and the European competitions. So the Belgian league is backtracking, the Dutch league is backtracking, but the Dutch league is covered because their prime minister, the Netherlands prime minister, had, you know, come out and said, hey, look, no public gathering and no closed-door sporting or social gathering until September 1st. So that gave them some covering. That's number one. Secondly, at the top of their league table was, you know, a tie between AFC Ajax and AZ Alkmaar. So it's not like the situation in Italy, especially in England, where Liverpool are 25 points ahead. It was an easy cop out for them, but they're having second thoughts about it.
You also have a situation now where, in terms of the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, and the issues that is led to for the clubs in terms of financial issues, it's being said now that the transfer market is going to be a depressed one. It's a seller's market, a buyer's market, I should say. Players will be for sale for vastly reduced sums. Some teams have gotten lucky. Chelsea, who were under a transfer ban for a couple of windows, they would be more liquid in terms of cash than the other clubs. Barcelona, who have bought heavily, Manchester United as well, seem to be in some deep debt. Barcelona in particular looking to shed some players off the wage bill. And a number of the high-profile moves, the likes of Paul Pogba, Jordan Sancho, Coutinho, and company gentlemen, possibly not going to happen this summer.
Exactly. You know, there are so many complications in place. But, like you said, it's going to be a buyer's market because a lot of those clubs, like you said, Barcelona, you know, for those Barcelona fans out there, you know, they are a highly geared football club. And, of course, with financial fair play, guarding the kind of activity they can do in the market, they have to sell to buy. And, of course, they have a lot of high-profile players out there that haven't been, you know, they have Dembele, they have Coutinho and others that they are trying to get off their books in order to be able to buy. They still want Neymar, you know, but anyone heading to PSG to request for Neymar's signature better have a very, very, you know, huge war chest on them. For some clubs, like you said, Chelsea, they're in a very good place. Recently, I read Hakim Ziyech from Ajax saying no matter what. Again, another thing that, you know, we didn't touch upon about 30th end of season deadline. It means so much. A lot of players are on loan, and some players are out of contract. Hakim Ziyech is out of contract. He's being paid peanuts at Ajax. He signed a free transfer to Chelsea, and he has said, I'm going to Chelsea on July 1st. And there are a lot of other players considering the same move. So if you restart the league, or those other, and again, the Premier League today, or the government of the United Kingdom government have, you know, put their, you know, supported the Premier League to finish their league, and they'll be having a meeting on Friday. So what is going to happen to those players that are out of contract, and what are going to happen to those players that are coming in with new contracts to join clubs? You know, another team that might be in a bad position would be Manchester City, with all the issues they're having with player signatures and the ban, and the ban that they are trying to fight. So quite a lot to look out for in the coming weeks and months.
Well, thank you very much, Kenny. And Nick, our stop will be regionally, as we take in some of the controversy in Trinidad. It all seems to be going from bad to worse to bizarre. Latest developments over the past few days, we saw William Wallace, the former, well, no former, president of the TTFA, saying he's willing to take the body, the normalization committee, and one of the FA's banks to court for control of the bank account. We saw today now that the staff has not been paid for 2 months. Paul, do you think he has a leg to stand on? FIFA says he's no longer in charge. FIFA distributed the funds, but the bank accounts clearly still under the signatory in terms of William Wallace being able to access that money, despite what FIFA says, and the normalization committee reportedly trying to change the names on the account. So what?
I think, Curtis, that Mr. Wallace is on an extremely futile mission. And I'm not bothered about whose name is on that bank account. Where the money for the bank account going to come from? We know that they've been basically bankrupt for quite a while. They own everyone. They can't pay the staff. They can't pay the coaching staff, the staff in the office. No one they can pay. So that money that has been promised by FIFA only this week, the emergency funds, I think, is just around $1 million. I don't think FIFA, having put the normalization committee in place, will allow anyone apart from Mr. Haddad anywhere close to that money. So I think he's on a futile chase. I think at some point he's going to have to give it up.
Yes, indeed, as we return to the penalty spot, just about 15 minutes to the hour of 7. Of course, penalty spot in association with the BFA. We were speaking moments ago about the normalization committee and what's happening in Trinidad. Also, of course, Kenneth, the Gold Cup suspended, Nations League suspended in terms of regional football. Well, I mean, nothing going on. On the plus side, players might have been injured, have had the chance to recover. But I'm seeing a great trend now. Players are saying, even when the games are able to resume, one of the concerns they have is that the leagues will be so backed up, they'll have to play lots of games in a very short period. So the issue of injury could be very, very serious. I'm sure in terms of the Champions League as well, if you get hurt now, you're probably out for the duration of the abbreviated Champions League. And with the 2021-2022 season clearly having to start sometime pretty soon after the cessation of this season, it's pretty much a nightmare for top-level players.
Yeah, definitely. Curtis, I think we might have Randy in now.
let's try to see if we can bring him in and to look at some of the what's been happening around the CONCACAF CFU area. Is Randy with us? Good evening, Randy.
Hi, good night, Randy. No, I think he's...
not as yet.
Not with us as yet, but Paul, as I was saying earlier, a bit of a nightmare in Trinidad. Everything that basically could have gone wrong has gone wrong. We've seen a number of former players coming out and saying they are in favor of the normalization community because it cannot continue to be business as usual. And we also saw today in Jamaica, Ricardo Fuller saying that if the Jamaica Federation had done a better job of running the affairs of the country over the years, that they would have qualified for some more World Cup finals and all across the region.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looks like we've had some serious issues in terms
of
administration.
Yeah, the whole ironic, Curtis, that the two countries you mentioned are the two highest ranked countries in the CFU region. I believe we have Randy with us now. Good evening, Randy.
Good evening. Good evening to everybody. Before we go on, though, I just hope that everybody is being careful. And I want everybody to stay safe. I believe that we can handle this thing.
How have you been handling the indoors?
It is very difficult for me. The old people got a say like a duck out of water.
Well, that's staying in the house, Randy. You don't tend to stay in the island, so I can only imagine.
I am behaving myself, though.
You're on the heavy manners, I take it.
Yes.
So, Randy, we've seen lots of developments across the world, across CONCACAF. Only we have the continuing saga in Trinidad. We have FIFA. We're hearing from FIFA that they will be, giving some emergency funds and so on to the associations. Have you been seeing it?
Well, it is very unfortunate, as I said last thing. But FIFA runs football. I think the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association has found themselves in a position that is not a good place to be. FIFA, all of us are financed by FIFA. We play under the regulations and rules of FIFA. And the normalization is something that it is an instrument that FIFA uses from time to time. And all of us, including Barbados, we are always, ensuring that we are running our association above board, because FIFA, even the money that I am reading in Trinidad that FIFA is going to send to the TNTFA, even that, you can't really get any funds that are due to you until you satisfy certain requirements. I mean, that is in an ordinary situation.
Yeah.
This is an extraordinary situation. And, it is really sad.
Where do you see this headed?
Well, just like any other country, I mean, FIFA rules the roost. And if you don't fall in line in these situations, I mean, you might win the case, but FIFA runs the football, so you might win the case. And then how about the players? Nobody's speaking about the actual game, what is going to happen if Trinidad is suspended from football. It may mean that, that'd be a real serious thing, because they won't be able to play against anybody, and that is one of their revenue earners. They won't be able to use FIFA referees. I mean, this is not a good situation to be in.
Yeah, it's a very sad situation, and it's just a saga that seems to be continuing. I mean, with the normalization committee in place, and I believe would have already started its work in the TTFA, is still fighting, fighting from every angle.
Under directive from FIFA. The normalization committee is the one that FIFA is recognizing
at the moment.
There have been other countries, most recently Guyana, from the English-speaking Caribbean, They were under normalization, and it went pretty smooth. And then after the normalization, candidates were able to put themselves up for election again. But it is a very serious thing in Trinidad, and there are some people who are of the view that the CFU should be supporting Trinidad and Tobago because they are a member, but we really have no grounds. That is not a matter for the CFU. Not that we play under the rules of FIFA.
And FIFA
decides when they bring in the normalization. It is like you know, if a club here plays the season, starts the season, knows the rules, and then because we have to take some action, they cry foul.
Randy, we know that if you take court action, FIFA normally goes into the mode where they impose a ban. You're banned from FIFA. Mm-hmm. Mr. Wallace, yeah, the former president, surely should be aware by now that if he continues along this road, you see, he might win the battle, but possibly could lose the war.
Yeah.
What can be done at the CFU level to avert this situation where Wallace and company are seemingly hell-bent on proving that they are still the legitimate body at the expense of perhaps a national ban? And someone has already said, but what happens to the footballers then in that situation who really don't have a horse in the race?
Well, as I tell you, FIFA has recognized the normalization committee that they put in place. That is the committee that all football bodies and members will have to recognize at this time. Let me put it that way.
Well, gentlemen, we have two, I'm sure Randy will be happy to hear, we have two veterans that will be joining us shortly. That will be Keith Griffith and Anthony Daisy-Clark. As I told you, Randy, we are going to introduce the club corner. And this week we're going to look a little bit at Wales and our player profile. We'll feature Anthony Daisy-Clark. I'm sure you're familiar with those two young boys.
Yeah, well, Anthony Clark, as a young player, I used to call his home an ass of Pele. That is how
you saw him.
That's how I saw him.
He held him in very high esteem. He can't go any higher than that.
Can't go much higher than that.
Yes, and I believe we have Keith on the line. Haven't heard you for quite a while. How are you doing?
Yeah. Keith Griffiths?
Yeah, Larry.
Well, Keith, you're on right now with the team. You can talk to me after, but you can proceed with Paul and Curtis, and you have a good man there with you, Randy Harris.
Oh, they're coming. You're coming to me now, then.
Well, You're on right now, Keith. Go ahead.
Well, blessings and good evening to all of Barbados. It's truly nice to be here chatting with you guys, no matter about the corona. God will take us through that period, and with God's continued blessing, hopefully, we will continue to do well. But Curtis and Paul, my two good buddies, go right ahead and ask me anything you want to ask me.
Every week from now on, we're going to be having our club profile. We're going to be looking at it in our club corner. All the clubs we're going to be looking at next week, we have another one. Today, we thought we'd start with Wales. Let's go back a few years, Keith. You played it for Wales as captain, coach, everything. Take us back to those early years.
Let me just say this. I feel proud to know that I have been in the 70s and early in the 60s with Wales. I joined Wales when I was only 17 years old, or heading to 17, playing with the likes of, obviously, Gas Clark and Jack Berry and Errol Clark, which is Gas' brother, Lord and Cameron Ramsey. And without boasting, I scored a hat-trick in my first game at Lodge. At that time, the Lodge, Harrison College and Commonmere played against the Premiership teams. After that, I went on to have a good career at Wales as captain and coach. And lots of people, Curtis and Paul, have lost a lot of money because they bet that I played for Beverly Hills First. But in actual fact, I actually played for Weymouth Wales First. It was known as New South Wales. Then Lumber Company Wales. And then the best Wales team of all times was in 1974 as Pan Am Wales, when we had persons like Nigel Harper and Jarabara on board, and we went to Trinidad and defeated the top team in the Caribbean at the time. That was the Trinidad Defense Force. We defeated them 3-0 at Queen's Park.
Before Keith goes on, Curtis, I think somebody's feeding back quite loudly. So if yeah. you're on speaker, or you can bring the levels down. I'm not sure who it might be. But we're also trying to get Anthony Daisy. We must add Pele now. Pele Clark in with us for the discussion.
One of the best footballers Barbados have ever produced, and one of the best players I've ever coached. But just back to Wales in 1974, the best Wales team of all time. Just to give the fans a reminder, we played at the back with a guy named Ken Devenish. He was the goalkeeper. We played with Wilbert, Pascal Stout, and Ricky Ford in the middle. We played with Mouser Ford at left back. And one of the best right backs of all time, Carlos Jack Berry Griffith at right back. He was the captain. Gas Clark and Harcourt Paul Hines played in the midfield. Gas brother Errol Clark played on the left. Then you had Barney Brappett and Lorden Cameron Ramsey as the two strikers, and I played on the right wing. Later on, persons like Clarence Allen, Victor Goddard, Ricky Goddard, Jerry Goddard, etc., etc. I can't call all the names. You join up the Wales team, Gus Sandiford, Cracker Goddard, Gary Mears, Harry Agard. Too many names to call, but Wales went on to be the leading team in the Caribbean, and I say that proudly.
Keith, how would you compare the current version of Weymouth Wales? When I say current, let's say last 5-6 years with some of the teams which would have gone before.
In this present dispensation, this team is very good. I would say that young PV, who is the coach, is blessed with lots of good players, very solid defense with Miller, Morris.
And I think we may have lost Keith.
Yeah, he was on a good run there, making that comparison.
Yeah, the current Wales team.
Yeah, he did mention
the team over the past 5 years.
Yeah, he did mention the fact that one of the teams he would have played in considered the greatest Wales team ever. And it was interesting to hear him start to make that comparison with the team now that has been. We can safely say Curtis has been the dominant club over the last couple of years.
Yeah, for sure. Different coaches. They've had 3 coaches now in 3 seasons. But what has not stopped is, in terms of Wales being competitive, they're just past the midway point approaching the midway point of the current season. But Wales still very much around among the front runners. I think they're actually leading the league last table I would have seen. And Randy, if you're still there, what is the process likely to be when we have the all clear? Let's assume we have the all clear in 2020. Do we complete the current season, or do we scrap it and go for another season?
Well, it all depends on when the all clear is given. I heard you all speaking about June and July, but I think it is going to take a while before people are comfortable to really get together again. And we have to wait and see. If we have time, we'll do something. If we don't have any time, we'll just have to scrap this season and start next year.
I was hoping that
we can finish the season because next year is a very busy year internationally, right? We are going to have the under 20 national squad in competition, or senior men's national squad in competition, and under 14s in competition. And it will make it kind of difficult for us, for the interruptions of the season, because we won't want our national players to be playing too often.
And then you will have the additional headache as well of what to do about promotion and demotion if you have an incomplete season as well.
Well, if we scrap the season, we'll start fresh in 2021. In other words, there won't be promotion or demotion this year.
Okay. I had a question when we were on the break about the last transfer window, which occurred basically during the middle
of the break due to the outbreak, would that still stand then? If we maybe continue, I assume it would. But if the season is cancelled, the players that would have switched in that very last transfer window, would those transfers hold?
Well, we made a transfer window. It was a difficult period. And, of course, there was minimum movement. And we will have to relook it. Yeah, but the transfer date, that transfer break was just for players who had not represented teams so far for the season.
Okay. So they would have a shot at some playing time.
Yeah.
In terms of the CFU now, I know when we spoke about the Barbadian context, you said the BFA was fortunate. Well, all of the member associations fortunate in terms of the fact that a large portion of their funding comes from FIFA. You'll miss the gate receipts, but the FIFA funding is still there, and this would help mediate some of the challenges. I saw Jamaica appealing to get some of their money, which was held back due to the issues they have been having, and FIFA asking them to put their house in order. How have the other Caribbean member associations been coping with the pandemic and the resulting pause?
Well, all of us are in the same boat, regardless of the member association. All of us are under curfew. We are experiencing the same things. FIFA has been generous and will deliver to all member associations the funds as promised. So we'll wait and see what is the outcome. I believe that the BFA may have to assist some of their players. I have not received any questions so far regarding players, but I believe that there will be some players that we may need to help if this situation continues for very long.
I know around the world a number of the associations, the European clubs in particular, and associations have been forced to sever some of their workers, put some of them on a reduced pay. Has the BFA been forced in this direction yet?
Well, no. It was a discussion that we had. But if, as I say, we are receiving funds, we will make sure that our staff, are able to continue working.
Okay.
When I say working, I continue to be on the payroll.
Okay, yes. Randy. Well, we want to thank you very much for joining us this evening, bringing us updates. It's good to be back on the air with football. And I'm sure that as we continue over the next few weeks, well, the players and the fans may not be enjoying the football on the field, that we're going to keep them at forefront of what's happening with the sport.
Yeah, I want to thank you. I want to also thank you for having me this evening. It's such illustrious company as Anthony Daisy Clark, a man who really brings a lot of joy to people in Barbados during his period of playing. And up to now, there are people in Jamaica still asking me, "What become a clap?" So he has left a mark somewhere.
That's right.
Okay, so have a good evening.
Okay, Randy, thanks a lot. Well, that's the MJ Bunda. Mr. Clark, we're going to bring him on shortly and join again with Keith Griffiths. Keith, I believe, is back with us. Keith?
Yes, Paul, I'm back with you.
Yes, we're standing by to have Daisy with us also. You were talking about that, the comparison of the two teams.
After that team of 74, Wales produced players like Daisy Clark, Adrian Hall, Paddy Hewitt, Vicious Alkins, Peter Woody-Haynes, one of the best right backs I've seen in the world in my lifetime. A gentleman by the name of Little Mike Edmere, Cracker Goddard, Edward Smith, Gary Mears, I wouldn't want to miss him out either, and Sylvain Lewis on the left. So we also had a number of outstanding, athletic, skillful players. Eric O'Malley is one of the best players I've seen in my entire life. And a number of the Wales players and Everton players and Benfica players could have played in the Premiership in this time. Yes, Paul?
Yes, and you were making that comparison. You did mention one of your one of the years you considered to be the greatest Wales team ever. I think Curtis had asked you the question in comparison to the team that we see playing now that is so dominant.
Well, this team is a very, very good team, but it's not a great team as yet. What I would like to say, when I'm commentating for Starcom on Trident 10, I don't favor a team. But if Wales are to go on to make an outstanding team to remember, they will need to change their perspective a little bit. In our time when we played at Wales, we never worried about the opposition. We came to four, blew them away in the first half, and then killed the game off in the second half. At the moment, based on what I'm seeing, Wales are playing 4-2-3-1, playing with two holding midfielders in front of the back four. Wales are too strong at the back to need two men to play in front of the back four. You could play with either Marquez, Jeffrey Williams with his experience, or young Hoyt. Romario Howard Hayward has to play very close to the pointer. And as you know, on the flanks, they have the captain with good pace and skill. You have Snags, Romario Hayward, who I'm always speaking about. And Wales need to go for broke. And if you remember, Paul, when you were bringing me home as you normally do, thanks very much. Wales lost 3-2 to St Andrew Lions. When you're Wales, you can't afford to concede 3 goals.
Okay, Keith. We have Anthony Daisy Clark on the line. Good evening, Daisy. Good evening to Anthony Clark.
Good evening, Paul.
Good evening. So good to hear you.
It's a pleasure to be on your program this evening. Hello to Keith. Hello to Curtis. And hello to the travelers over there.
How have you been keeping?
Great.
Good to hear that. We mentioned earlier that you're a player personality for this evening. And I mean, an illustrious career. We've been hearing Keith talking about Wales. You've had your moments with them also. Up to today, you were sharing a little bit of an extract from, was it 1989 that you had sent in relation to that team back then, looking to go into the 90s? I want to take you back to those early days playing for Wales, and then you would have moved on and played some professional football. I believe it was in Scotland.
Yes, I did a track in Scotland. But I must say that from the era with my uncle, Jack Clark, and Keith and those former players, the Goddard medals, Victor Pugard Goddard, Richard Goddard, and that whole real team that I watched as a youngster, it was obvious that the only club that I wanted to play for had to be Weymouth Wales. I must also mention, too, that my aunt, Keith would know her very well, Doreen. She was a top seamstress. So she would stitch the numbers on those green and white jerseys right in our family home in Hogs Road. So it was obvious that at some time I had dreams of, one day putting on that green and white jersey, which I did. You know, with great joy and pride and representing the Carrington Village based Wales.
From playing for Wales, you went on, you would have played for Barbados, you would have played for the team in Scotland. Tell us about that move.
But even before I go there, Paul, mm-hmm. I just wanted to go a little back further when I really started
yes.
at Queen's Park United, which was a small village team. Right there in Halls Road. And a very good team, too. But the thing is that if you wanted to be really recognized and excel in football at that time, you had to be playing for one of the big teams, you know. You had to be playing for a Notre Dame. You had to be playing for Everton. You had to be playing for a Black Spurs, a Pines, an Empire. You know, these were the teams. And then teams like... Paradise came on later, Gall Hill came on later, Deacon's Farm came on, and teams like Trent. So I graduated from Queen's Park United to Weymouth Wales at about 20 years old. And there was no looking back once I started playing for Wales. You know, with great success, I must say, too. In 1984 and 1986, we were the double crown champions, and all the other years between there, we were still winning a knockout cup here and there, a league cup, and even when we weren't winning, we were close runners up in both of these cups.
Okay, I'm going to give you two questions, Daisy. Tell us, moving on to play for Barbados, who would have talked about some of those, your contemporaries in the Barbados team, and how did the trial in Scotland come about?
Okay, when I was called to trial for the national team, well, it started my talent and my ability was recognized from the youth level because I played on the 19th. So playing for the senior team was a natural graduation from the youth level right up to the senior team. I played on the 20, on the 19, on the 23, and straight into the senior team. And I could remember at the time, it was a great team, really great players. And the player that I had replaced in the senior team was Sipo. You remember Sipo?
Yes, definitely.
Yes, I had to replace Sipo, and you know, I was this young, energetic, skillful, upstart youngster, and I forced my way into that team, and I replaced Sipo in that national team. But yes, you had at the time also the team was largely Wales. Keith just made mention of a lot of those players who were part of that setup in the national team. You had Cracker Goddard, you had Edward Smith, you know, you had my cousin, Wayne Paul Lewis, you know, you had Jerry Goddard, you know, we had at least about seven or eight players on the national team at that time that came from Wales, and at least about six or seven used to be in the starting 11. So I was in good company in the national team, because you feel at home, because these are players that you are playing with in the local domestic competitions, and now you are playing with them in the national team. So it was like, you know, it was like playing for Wales, even though you're representing Barbados, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, so, but Daisy, the theme in the background is coming up. I'm sure I'm going to bring you back next week, and we're going to continue to talk about playing for Barbados. You know, playing against the regional countries and talk about your time in Scotland. So I'm definitely going to bring you back next week so we can talk, we can continue the discussion about your career. So thanks a lot to you, Anthony Daisy Clark.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much. And for Keith Griffith, we have Randy Harris and, of course, my co-host Curtis Sines. It's been our pleasure to be back today with Penalty Spot, and we're going to be back at the same time next week, 6:15, with more from the world of football. Good evening.